You're now listening to Sleep Time is Over.
Sleep Time is Over, baby.
We are back. We took a little hiatus, a little break. That's my bad. That's my bad.
Every episode needs a hiatus after.
I always feel like it's a welcome break for you, because then you're like, oh, 1 week I gotta listen to this shit. But I always appreciate you indulging back again.
Indulging. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Call it that.
And for those of you guys that are tuning in again, once again, this is Sky Cameron, and I'm with the illustrious Aaron Sakai.
Illustrious?
Yes.
I like that.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that word in a while.
And we're talking about the 1994 albums in hip-hop in our year in review, as we pursue to talk about or review every hip-hop album released in 1994.
Yeah.
We're in the 40s. Like, so I counted the albums, we're in the 40s right now.
Out of total what?
150 plus. So we're screwed. I mean, we'll be talking about 1994 into 2024.
Thank God. Yes, wonderful. That's a relief.
Well,
Wait a minute. We're going to cover 150 albums.
Well, we're going to mention a lot of them, because we're not going to talk about, like I said, these super obscure Houston, Bay Area, Detroit albums. We're going to mention them. So I'm going to do a couple segments that we're going to do in the future where it's going to be quick. We're going to play one track, and I'm going to be like, you heard of it? And you'd be like, nope. And then we move on.
I'm begging for that moment.
I just want to see how much of your memory retained of how many, like, because all we did was stare at record album covers.
Well,
right? Like, we stared at a lot of record albums. We stared at a lot of hip hop advertisements in The Source and Rap Pages, and so
well,
we were.
That's what come in here for. You're
right.
A reminder, because I'm old.
Right.
I don't remember this shit, but then I do once you remind me.
So right.
That's as much as I got.
Well,
that's all I got.
We are on now episode 10. Oh. Look at that, episode 10, a milestone.
Oh.
And in this one, we're going to be talking about 1994 sophomore successes and slump albums. And specifically, we're going to concentrate on rap duos. Rap duos.
Right. Two people.
And we're starting off with, I would say, an iconic group. Would you say so?
Okay.
They made an indelible imprint in hip-hop in the 90s.
They did, but the catalog ain't great.
No, it's not
a big catalog. Well, so it's amazing that they just grew from their name. One song.
I think this is a perfect one to start with. In sophomore successes and slumps, it's Nonfiction from Black Sheep. It was released December 6, 1994 on Mercury Polygram Records. And it was the sophomore album of Queens-born MC Andre Titus, a.k.a. Drez, and Brooklyn-born William McLean, a.k.a. Mr. Long. And although born and raised in New York, you know, the two actually met in Sanford, North Carolina, when Drez's parents relocated to North Carolina when he was 16 years old. They met in high school. Mr. Long's family had also relocated there, and they bonded on their ties for 80s hip-hop and their New York, you know, upbringings. So, do you remember the first time you heard Black Sheep? Obviously, was it Flavor in Your Ear?
Or Flavor of the Month, you mean?
Flavor of the Month, yes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, okay. The strange thing with Black Sheep is I first heard of them off not hip-hop shows, but off of Night Flight.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Off of
Deep Cut.
There was another show on TBS that would show music videos, and that's where I first saw them. It was like where they would play like alternative, and then they'd play like weird house music, and then they'd play weird hip-hop, and then they'd play Black Sheep. So that's how I found out about them. So
right.
I thought they were like some European thing.
Oh, yeah,
I didn't know about, because all these European rap video shows would show it. So it threw me off. Then I figured, okay, now UMTV Raps was showing them. All right, Flavor of the Month was the first thing. It looked very European, that video.
Mm.
The way that, you know, they're with the sheep, obviously, but then they got the dance moves and they're in the suits. And then Choice du Jour came out, and then it blew up from there. And I don't, you know, I think of these guys, are they overrated?
Well, we're going to talk about it. This album, their first album, A Wolf in Sheep's Clothing, actually made your top 10 albums of 1992.
Right.
We talked about that. Or 1991, excuse me.
Right.
But
then you have this album, right? And
so, yeah, I think this is an interesting look at a group that in 1994, and we see this a lot with a lot of guys, searching for a sound, searching to stay up with the times, keep up with the Joneses, if you will, with the ever-evolving hip-hop sound, yeah. Right? Wu-Tang Clan and Boot Camp Click, Duck Down Records, kind of changed the soundscape of New York hip-hop.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to sound harder, grimier.
Right.
You know, and people didn't want to scream like as much as like Onyx.
Right.
Because that was a trend.
Right.
But Wu-Tang and Duck Down, like, really brought back some edginess and originality to New York.
Right.
In 93 into 94. And I think a lot of guys scrambled, and we're going to talk about a lot of groups in 94, and we have mentioned a few that scrambled into reinventing themselves, reinventing their sound.
Well, it left the Native Tongues like wondering what to do. And this group was Native Tongues-esque.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, they had to figure it out.
Their first appearance on Wax, do you remember what their first appearance on Wax was? It was on another Native Tongue album.
Black Sheep you're talking about.
It's an obscure track.
Queen Latifah involved in this?
No, it was
Money Love involved.
No. It was off of De La Soul's De La Soul is Dead album, and it was a track called Fanatic of the B Word. It was like a posse cut.
I haven't heard that.
It's like we haven't heard it in ages, right?
Yeah.
So, but when they originally conceived the group, it was Drez as a lead MC, and Mr. Long was never gonna rap.
That he was a
DJ,
problem.
And yes. he was a producer first and foremost.
Exactly.
So. We have to talk about the history of what made Black Sheep a success going into this album, because Mr. Long left North Carolina, moved back to New York, and basically scratched for DJ Red Alert. DJ Red Alert thought he was dope and brought him to Mike G of the Jungle Brothers.
Right.
This is at this point, he's not even talking to Drez. He had left North Carolina. They had lost touch. And then, you know, suddenly Mr. Long had this native tongue, you know, connection. He became Queen Latifah's DJ. So Mr. Long then is walking down the street in New York, and who does he run into? He runs into randomly Drez, who had just moved back to New York. So how random is that? So they reconnected in the group. They obviously were going to be involved in Native Tongues, but they wanted to be the opposite of what Native Tongues represented, right? They weren't doing the pro-black. They weren't doing the Africa pendants, right? They want to talk about sex.
Yeah.
They wanted to be a little bit ironic. They wanted to, like, be a little edgier, have a little bit more humor.
Yeah.
So they went against the grain of Moni Love and Chiali and De La and Tribe and Jungle Brothers. And that's why they were the Black Sheep of the family. So
that's the name.
Right. And we got to really give Mr. Long his props, not as a rapper, but as a producer, because it was him that really conceived almost all the beats for their first album.
Yeah, it was excellent.
And the beats are excellent. In retrospect, do you know how much that album would have cost with those samples? Because he was the sample meister.
That had to have been,
I mean, ridiculous. You even look at The Choice Is Yours. I think the sample's like seven jazz records on that one track. You know, so.
No, it's masterful what he did. And
right.
They were very unique at the time because they were the Black Sheep of hip-hop, really.
Yeah.
They didn't sound like anything.
Oh, yeah, they didn't sound like anything.
About all kinds of, his voice is unique, and the beats were unique to 91.
Right.
And then they let the lightning out of the bottle for this one. Because they decided, Mr. Long, time to rap. Bad idea.
Well, he rapped on the first album, but not as much. Yeah, not as much. And he'd always be calling himself Sugar Dick Daddy, Mr. Long, and it was all sex rhymes. And he reminded me a lot of Red Hot Love Atone, right?
Well,
like,
right.
We're just kind of, I don't want to. And we talked about this, too. It's like, the sex rap back in the day, I'm like, do we really need this? It's like,
well, it was new at the time. 91, it wasn't mentioned as much because you only thought about sex with Two Life Crew. So if he were to just come out and just say like maybe one line and then that's it, that's fine. Not a whole verse like what he did here. So I don't know what possessed the meetings to be like, okay, I'm going to start rapping now. And then Drez like, what? And then, no, I want to start rapping now, Drez. I'm like, all right. Down the toilet it went.
Well, we just can say like without a doubt, you know, Flavor of the Month, you know, Choice Is Yours, you know, Strobe Light Honey, Similac Child. I mean, these are all classic.
Yes.
Remix for Similac Child's Five Mics, right? Like, and I just really thought that Mr. Long's creativity as a producer, he should have just, I don't know, stayed in his lane. And what? I think what happened with Nonfiction, and Drez admits this too, Drez then wanted to produce more. And that's why the sound of this album so significantly different is because Drez says, let's do less samples that are might be expensive. Let's slow the tone down of the album. This is a significantly slower album, right?
Yeah.
And then Mr. Long rapped more. So it's like the formula that was working, like,
let's throw it in the gut. So see, that's the thing with these young guys. Like they're kind of, do they have a direction really? These guys have a direction when they're young?
And can we say, okay, at this point in 91, Wolf and Sheep's Clothing goes gold, which is huge.
Right.
We talk about how rare it is for a hip-hop album to go gold and platinum, you know, in the 90s.
Yes.
And we also mentioned, I think, when we talked about their singles back in the day in our 91 episode, they were the first ever hip-hop group to ever perform on The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
Which was a huge, like, cultural breakdown, you know, barrier into, like, pop culture and, you know,
that'd
like
be white
mainstream.
A lot of white people like them.
And how many commercials has Choice Is Yours been used in?
Right.
Kia commercials and Airhead commercials.
For years.
Oh my God.
It's been used.
They used it in a voting commercial to vote.
Yes.
You remember that?
Yes.
Man.
I mean, it's a classic song that they're still making money off of to this day.
Yeah.
I hope.
I hope so too.
Depending on the contract they signed. But clearly everybody knows that song.
But they were under so much pressure to produce a successful follow-up.
That's what it
is. I just think
these young guys.
The pressure sometimes produces diamonds, but diamonds are rare.
Well, and you don't have anybody that's overseeing the whole thing. Like who the hell's at Mercury?
Yeah, who's A&R-ing at Mercury?
Who could that be? Red Hot Lover Tone? Who could that even be? So you have that problem, and then you have clearly they've had production meetings before they started recording this album, and they're like, you know what? I think it's a good idea if I do the beats. Mr. Long's like, I gotta rap.
You got two years to make this album. Their album comes on 91. This is over 2 years, and then I think the label were looking at it like, well, what's the singles? How do we release this? Like you said, how do we market it?
Yep.
And they just didn't get the promotion from Mercury.
Yep.
And I assume that like whoever was at Mercury just knew that the chemistry wasn't there and there wasn't really any singles here.
They didn't put anything behind it at all.
The album debuted at number 14 on the Billboard Hip Hop album charts, and it debuted 107 on the Billboard Pop charts.
This had no marketing.
And it soon dropped off the charts. And they had one music video for Without a Doubt, which we opened the show with. And then do you remember what the second single ones?
Oh yes. Shoot. I have it. Is it a long
it
term?
Was yeah, north, south, east,
right.
west.
That's right.
And
there was a remix to this.
Yes, we'll play that too. I have the Buckwild remix, which is super rare. Did you have that Buckwild remix?
I have that.
Wow. Remix. So that was wax only, right? Or maxi single?
That was probably maxi or vinyl only.
So I know you bought this album when it came out. We all bought this album
as
when it came out.
Everyone did.
Right.
With little
It was
fanfare.
A huge album. It was a Christmas release, too. It was a holiday album.
But it was something fishy, though, behind it. Like, you could tell something not right here, because it came out, you have Choices Yours, and there's no marketing for this Nonfiction album at all. You would think the major, look, they're back.
Right.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Something was
up. The ads in The Source were not splashy ads.
Nothing.
They didn't pump a lot of money into it.
Nope.
The MTV, Yo MTV Raps, even though Without a Doubt had its rotation.
Yeah.
But it didn't, like, it was just, it came and went really quickly. And we didn't even mention who produced Without a Doubt. Mr. Salaam Remy. Yeah. So, we're also looking at two guys that are probably, maybe Without a Doubt was a track that was like, the label was like, hey, Salaam Remy's hot right now. I think you guys don't have a single. Maybe you should go in. Like, I can't verify this, but
well, they need a party song because everybody's gonna remember Black Sheep for the party song.
Was that a party song?
That was a problem. That was really bad. It went to a slower version of a party song to kind of match up with the Dr. Dre's going on, with the New York getting slower.
The album just lacked a sense of humor and personality of the debut.
There was no humor in this album.
We talked about the beats. They're a lot slower, darker. They're less eclectic. The beats are fine, but I feel like these beats should be for other artists.
Right.
Right? Like, this, going back and re-listening to this album, the beats aren't terrible. It just doesn't... Their rapping with the beats just is not that great.
Look how angry they sound. Drez is supposed to be a smooth guy. He's not an angry guy.
Right.
And then, shout out to the House of Pain sample in this song.
Yeah.
You know, anybody remembers the original intro to Jump Around? But
let's play the Buckwild remix.
For
North, South, East, West.
Oh, right.
You remember this?
This is a good beat. It works. It's fine.
But you know, if this was on the album, this would probably be the best song. This remix.
Yeah.
So I think what goes to say is like, they should have worked with other producers. I think they should have. Hip hop was so evolving, it wouldn't have hurt them to have Q-Tip produce a song. You know, they had access to great production within native tongues.
Right.
But
there was no direction. The bottom line. It took too long to come out, so clearly they didn't know what to do. They were riding off of the success of Choice Is Yours and all that too long. Too long. Pardon the pun, Mr. Long. And this is what you get.
Yeah.
Confusion.
It just didn't sound original. It was just kind of slow and didn't make the impression.
Behind the Times.
Yeah.
Behind the Times album.
It's not garbage. Because there's worse albums than this.
Of course.
It's just boring. It's a boring album.
Yeah.
And I think that's the hardest thing for me to grasp is I never imagined Black Sheep as a boring group. And for them to produce a boring kind of slog of an album was rough, dude.
Well,
you know?
That's the truth, aka nonfiction. Sorry, I had to just throw it in there.
Did you remember liking anything on the album besides the singles?
Liking the singles was rough. That was rough. It was like you're trying to hold on to hope.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, it's a great song.
Right.
Yeah, it is. And then the rest of the album, if you're listening to it on the bus,
right?
I don't remember a damn thing.
So you're just feeling like a royalty. You're just feeling like a royalty and like going to eat at like a restaurant that you did when you're a kid, when you're an adult, and you like want to believe that the food is still good,
just hold on.
But it sucks.
Right. And watching a movie as a kid.
Right. You realize like Zippy's isn't great, right?
But we're gonna hold on.
Sorry to the Zippy's guys, but
yeah.
But when you're a kid, it's like the greatest thing ever.
Oh, right.
Or
Spaghetti Factory.
Right? Oh, yeah. I think a lot of Asian women are still hypnotized by Old Spaghetti Factory.
Oh, I'm sure. Asian men as well. But it's like that. It's just holding on to hope. I really don't remember much of anything memorable at all in this album.
Yeah.
They had a nice cover.
The cover's really nice.
Album cover.
I like that title, the first track, not the title track, but the first track, Autobiographical. Do you remember that one where Drez kind of tells the story of his life? It's what opens the album.
Right, the opener of the album.
It's
okay.
Yeah, it sounds like what they would do with like if they like worked with the Roots because it had kind of a instrumental-esque. Like kind of beat.
Well, let's put it this way to people out there that may not have heard this album. Okay, so you know when you're making mixtapes for your friends, and I'm sure you know about this, when you're putting various artists together and you're trying to make a mixtape of songs that you think are good to give to somebody, a tape, CD, what song are you pulling from this album?
Whew.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Maybe the remix of the North, South, East, West, and that's not even on the album.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
That's it?
That's true. But even the remix that they did for Without a Doubt didn't really do anything, and
it was okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not gonna share it with anyone.
You know,
it's unfortunate.
Do you remember the guest stars on this album?
They actually
have Showbiz and AG on the album on a song called Effect.
EFFECT. Yeah. Yes, I do remember that one.
Yes,
they spell it out right.
And then the group that Black Sheep would help promote, The Legion.
Yep, Jingle Jangle.
Yes, on a song called We Boys, which is a rough
beginning of
track.
The
beginning of the end for the Legion. Shout out the Legion.
Never,
we will talk about them on our ones and duns.
Can't wait.
But the group, obviously, they had a lot of creative differences, mainly arguing over production. And Mr. Long wanted to use a lot of samples, and Drez says, I need to, let's pull away from samples. And
this is what you got.
But they would break up, and then they reunited in 2006 for the very little-known 8WM Novocaine album. Do you remember that album?
Barely. But the lightning's out of the bottle.
Yeah.
That's it. Even Drez's solo career wasn't anything.
Yeah, Drez kept releasing albums. He's huge in Europe. I had no idea that he's maintained quite an impressive career in Europe.
Right.
But, and Mr. Long still, like, pimps and beats out. Like, he's selling beats, but, you know, like...
Well, like I told you, like, the first time I found out about Black Sheep was off these European music video shows.
So. And Drez took the name Drez the Black Sheep.
Right.
Like, he took that name, right? So, he kept it... So he released two more albums, one in 2010, 2018.
Right.
All right, what did The Source give this album in 1994?
Oh, probably 3 mics.
They gave it 3.5.
Wow.
Shockingly enough, they gave it...
They were holding on to hope. This is not a 3.5 album. No way.
Yeah.
No way at all.
I think it's like you said, it's like a reverence for the group.
We're holding on to hope.
Yeah.
These guys, because we just loved them so much from the first album. We're holding on.
Right.
And now we're letting go. Because that's it.
Well, what do you give the album now and then? If you had to come up with a...
Well, 2.5 back then. Because it's not memorable. I'm not going to give it anything of a high ranking because it's just, I don't remember any of it.
Right.
And it's just total offshoot of what they could have been. And they screwed it up. Whoever did. Not blaming anyone. And then now,
ooh, let's go. Let's see. Whoa, no, come on.
I'll go one. I'm not listening to this in the car. Who the hell's gonna listen to this in the car? You're telling me in 2021 you're gonna put this on?
I don't think it's awful. I don't listen to it, no.
It's boring. Boring is just as bad as awful.
Okay. Probably back in the day I was disappointed, so I give it like 2.5 back then. I still give it like 2.5 now.
Well, I mean, we gotta look at definitions of awful. Like, do we really enjoy listening to boring music?
We haven't gotten into awful, my friend. We will be getting into awful.
Well, right, but I'm gonna give this as boring is just as bad as awful. This album is boring.
Okay.
Therefore, I don't like it. One mic.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So I guess we're both gonna agree this is a sophomore slump.
Oh, yeah.
And led to the demise of the group. I mean, really. I mean, even with them coming back, the magic was gone.
No one can say this was a success. No one.
Now let's go to another album, which I feel is undisputed. I don't think anybody can argue this album. It's Stress the Extinction Agenda. It's the sophomore album from Organized Confusion.
Yes.
It was released August 16th. 1994 on Hollywood Basic, which was a label owned by Disney.
Wow.
And Elektra.
That's right.
Yeah, it was distributed by Elektra Records.
Yeah.
But this is the sophomore release of Queens hip hop duo Troy Jamerson, aka Pharoah Monch, and Lawrence Baskerville, aka Prince Poe, otherwise known as Prince Poetry. The group formed in the mid 80s under the name Simply Too Positive. And originally was shopped to Russell Simmons, and Russell Simmons basically told them that it was the worst name. Get rid of that bullshit name.
Agreed.
It was one of they did not get signed by Def Jam, but it was very close. Instead, they took a $40,000 higher deal from Hollywood Basic, because Hollywood Basic at that time, like, I can't think of another artist that was on Hollywood Basic, to tell you the truth.
Just the name alone just sounds...
It sounds basic.
Pretty much. That's where the basic bitches came
but
from.
Russell Simmons actually liked them. Bobito Garcia of the Stretch and Bobito Show brought them as Simply Too Positive to Def Jam. And Russell said, their name is garbage.
Right.
Any rap group with a number in their name is... should be history at this point.
Agreed.
Yeah? So he's like, get rid of that shit. And then he offered them a deal... But Hollywood Basic was building their label off them $40,000 more. And I guess in 1991, when they signed the label, like $40,000 is a lot of money.
Yes.
So, you know, we can just mention really quickly, they released their debut album in 91 with Fudge Pudge. And, you know, that was a minor hit, right? Introduced the world to OC as well. But this is the album. This is their seminal album. This is their best work. This is their closest thing they're going to have to a masterpiece, if not a masterpiece.
Yeah.
You agree with that?
Well, totally.
This
classic
album. This is ambitious album. I mean, conscious themes, high concept songs. I mean, super intelligent lyrics. Even the way these guys throw their syllables and their musicality with the beat. Nobody flowed like these guys, right?
Exactly.
Like, if you listen to Pharoah Monch, not only as a lyricist, but as a professor of rap flow, this guy is extremely influential.
Right.
And probably there's a lot of rappers that don't even know they were influenced by him.
That is correct. And what else can you really say about this 5-mic album?
It's incredible album. Yeah, I remember buying it. Love the album cover. One of the best album 5-mic album cover by late hip-hop artist Matt Du, who also did the Company Flow album cover.
Yeah.
He did the Body Rock single cover for Mos Def, Q-Tip, and Tash. And he did the Jigga Masters album cover as well. So shout out to Matt Du, rest in peace. So any initial thoughts? I mean, there's obviously no argument as far as disputing this album as a classic, but was there standout tracks to you, or is every song pretty much...
Well, clearly better than the first album, first off.
Oh, yeah.
This
it was...
By far
a superior album than their debut.
Not gonna sell, because it's critically acclaimed. But this is the... If you had to put a mecca or like the ultimate critically acclaimed master album, this is it.
Yeah.
This is the greatest critically acclaimed album. The one that doesn't make money.
Yes, yes, you're right.
That's what critically acclaimed is, for the people that don't...
And an album that was like highly underappreciated and just kind of got kind of buried at the time, you know? Like, I mean...
Lost in the shuffle. There's a whole bunch of stuff coming out. It got lost in the mix. Great video.
Oh, yeah.
Stress was a great video, so that brought a lot of attention to them in that sense. They remained who they were. They even tweaked a little bit even to become even more original than who they were.
Oh, yeah.
Despite all of the Wu-Tangs and the Dr. Dre and Nas, they're still doing their own thing.
Yeah.
And it worked. And they're not trying to copy anything or try to be anything.
No, they're highly original.
And like, it got slower with their songs, because a lot of their songs in the first one was fast. But still, they did the Let's Organize song with Q-Tip, right? That was here. That was a fast one, and it worked.
You had the great... You're talking about 3-2-1?
Was that the one on this album? There's
3-2-1 with Let's Organize. Yeah, right. Let's play that. But
Q-Tip's on there and OC's on there, right?
Oh, Let's Organize. Here we go. Let's Organize. You're right.
Right, this one.
So, I just think they probably picked... Stress is a fantastic song, but I think it was a hard song to market as a commercial single, obviously. I think this would have been a fantastic lead single.
Yeah.
But I also think the group wanted to get props for being on their own, probably on their first single, not getting guest stars.
Yeah,
on
you
wouldn't single.
Want to do that. But a lot of alternative people that were into alternative music like this.
Right.
They were showing this on MTV during the day as like a... They used to have like, they would show like buzzworthy videos of music that you didn't know of, and they would play this during the day. So it got that push for like the Hollies.
Yeah. This song is like a successor to Fudge Pudge. It's like Fudge Pudge 2, right? In a way.
Yeah. Same situation.
But it was a commercial failure. You know, the album wouldn't even barely crack the Billboard rap album charts in the top 30.
Oh, yeah.
And then it just disappeared.
Definitely.
And then they would eventually leave Hollywood Basic. And you remember what label they would get signed to after that?
Priority, right?
Priority Records.
Right. Yeah.
And then they would release the Equinox, which again, kind of was...
They tried. It got more harder edge. Then you could see the confirmation or them conforming with Equinox, because that was not as experimental.
Right. Kind of going for singles, kind of going for a little bit more conventional songs, even though Monch is... You know, like a beast on the mic, and Prince Poetry is very underrated, but yeah, the magic just wasn't there by Equinox.
Right.
You know, by 97 standards anyway, right? Because we're in the Puff era almost, you know, we're getting in there.
And it wasn't gonna make it.
So I think Pharoah Monch and Poetry also they don't get props as producers. They produced a lot of this album.
Yeah.
They did 9 out of the 13 tracks.
Right.
You know, so shit. I mean, Buckwild produced 3 tracks. He produced Stress.
Yeah.
And then the only other producer to work on the album is Rock Wilder. He did the track Maintain.
That is correct.
And then the only 2 guest MCs got on there are Q-Tip and OC. Shit, man. If you're going to have 2 guest MCs...
We're clearly right.
Right. Now, the album released 2 singles, right? Stress and Bring It On. Did you have both of those vinyls?
Yes. And then the Bring It On remix.
Bring It On remix. Okay. Let's talk about that really quick. One of the best... remixes of the 90s.
Classic Buckwild beat right here.
And classic Buckwild beat.
This is the style of beat he always makes. So this, along with just the whole vibe of the album, Oh, yeah, and don't forget the Stress remix with Large Professor.
Yes, I got that queued up too as well.
Yeah, so they got that one.
But these were remixes that were only circulating around super hardcore, if you know, you know, guys and
right.
DJs.
Right.
No one had these remixes right. at the time, which was great for us as young kids in the 90s because we wanted to be like only playing this. We felt like we had something secret. It was totally right. that vibe, you know what
right.
I mean? Like,
it's a gift and a curse for these guys.
It's a gift and a curse for these guys.
Making money from our secrets here,
right.
you know? So it's a shame. It's really a shame. That's how music was back in the 90s.
We wanted to keep our favorite groups a secret.
Yeah, it was very strange, the thought process there. We just didn't care about money or their success needs to be made
right.
because then they can continue to make stuff.
Right.
We didn't figure that. Very strange thought process we had.
Especially groups like this where these guys were definitely not commercial. This is not Candyman knocking boots and shit. You know
right.
what I mean? Like,
right.
This is, so we want to keep this to ourselves. Oh, you guys aren't going to get it if you like commercial rap. You
there
know
was
what I
that
mean?
Thought process.
Right.
Right.
So here, let's play the Stress remix, which is another.
So the thing with this, that first comes to mind when I hear this remix is, Large Professor says, crush, kill, destroy Stress way too many times.
Right. That's
I'm
true.
Like, how many times are you going to say this? Like, you think the song is just that. And you're like, when are you not going to say that? When? Okay, now you're done. Okay. It was very strange for a chorus.
Right.
I just remember, like, it just way too many repeating of that. I think more so than a regular chorus.
Well, I think we can say Hollywood Basic didn't know what to do with this masterpiece. They didn't know what to do, how to market this album. And
basically, they, yeah.
To me, I think they should have actually pushed this more with white rock publications to review. Rolling Stone, Spin, you know, and actually Spin magazine went on to go back and say this was one of the best albums of 1994 that no one heard.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Because I think that this was ahead of its time. They should have been marketed more to the college kids.
Right.
It.
The Far Side people.
Right.
Those kind of guys. Guys like the Goats.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Those guys. Yeah.
Right. You know, the Souls of Mischief guys, you know, like.
But then when you have, you know, a company that's basic, what else can you do? We're just going to keep the marketing basic.
I just want to mention a standout. If you guys want to know, like, how good of, like, a conceptual rap song can be, because they're not always that good. And sometimes they're a little too straight. Listen to Stray Bullet. Stray Bullet is, I think it's a fantastic song. The beat's incredible. And they actually portray themselves in the role of bullets, you know, flying through out of the gun and through the streets.
That is correct.
It's awesome, man. So what did The Source give this album in 1994?
Four.
They gave it four mics.
Yeah, this clearly the Source can't be front on this. So yeah.
Right. What do you give this album then? What do you give this album? What do you give it then and what do you give it now?
Back then, for the fact of it didn't resonate as much, I gave it a four back then.
Yeah, okay.
But now it's a five. It's
I agree. It's an album that grew into itself because I think also us being teenagers, we can't grasp all these concepts.
Right.
And I think it's an album that the more you listen to, the more you unlock what they're trying to say and the meanings of songs take on differently and you can appreciate.
It gets better and better.
It gets better and better and
for
better.
Listen.
So I agree with you. I think it was four mics back then. I think it's five mics now.
Yeah.
I agree with you. So we can say undisputedly, this is a sophomore success.
Oh, clearly, yeah.
Yes.
And the greatest critically acclaimed album of all time.
Yeah.
Didn't make any money.
Yes, it did not make
any money.
Once
again, critically acclaimed, if I say that, means they didn't make shit financially from this.
See? Yes.
I mean, hopefully they made something out of it after all these years, but they did. So.
All right. Now we're going to talk about an album that was...
Oh, really?
We're going to talk about it.
Because
they are a duo.
Indeed they are.
Yes, this is the UMCs. The album is called Unleashed. It was released January 25th, 1994 on Wild Pitch EMI Records. It was the sophomore album of Staten Island duo Carlos Evans, a.k.a. Haas G, and Kim Sharpton, a.k.a. Cool Kim. Now... I know you are a fan of UMCs, the original UMCs, the Fruits of Nature UMCs.
Right.
We talked about them in our previous one, One to Grow On.
Yeah.
Blue Cheese was a number one Billboard rap single hit. I mean...
But then, there's this.
Now, let's before we completely take a dump on this album, okay, let's just say some positive things about them, right?
This song, when I first heard it, I dug it.
Right.
I dug it.
This is the best song on the album.
And that's the problem. It was the best song on the album. So that was the thing. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro. Everybody said it. And that's all we knew from it. And that was it. And then we were excited. And then they looked all rough. And they're wearing big bomber jackets. And they're like, what are you guys doing? And then you look like Wu-Tang. And then, oh shit. Down the toilet it went. So, we did hang in there, UMCs. We hung in there for your first single, but that was it. We tried.
Two singles, come on. Oh, this song. Yeah, this single. Song. Yeah, this song. Well, let's go back to 1998. Do you remember what UMC stood for?
Oh.
Now, this is testing your rap knowledge here.
Oh, shit. UMCs, what did they stand for? Cult. Something was cult, right?
No.
Crew.
No.
What was the C?
It's a...
What? What is it?
The Undisputed Masters of Charisma. Oh!
Indeed.
Yes.
Wow. Wow.
So
I fully forgot about
signed that. To Wild Pitch Records in 1990, yes. And then the 1991 Fruits of Nature album. It was a sleeper hit, right?
Yes.
So they were the first major group to come out of Staten Island. I mean, before them, it was only Force MDs.
Yeah.
And Wu-Tang was shortly follow them after, but they're probably their biggest thing against them was Wu-Tang following them.
Yes.
Because then Staten Island was portrayed as this new breeding ground of talent.
Right.
UMC's already come out. They were doing this colorful Kwame, danceable
right.
music.
Right. Shirts, pastels.
And that shit got out of fashion already in hip-hop. Yep. And especially representing Staten Island.
Yep.
And I don't know if you knew this, but the UMCs, so Haas and Kool Kim, they worked at the Statue of Liberty together. And they worked with members of the Wu-Tang Clan.
Wow.
So they were all friends.
Right.
And so the Wu-Tang Clan actually looked up to them because they were the first guys from Staten Island to blow up.
Right.
So to think like, then it was totally reversed. And the UMCs were like, oh, we got to follow these guys now? Like, can you imagine though, like, after Wu-Tang drops and then UMCs go, How the hell are we gonna come out with something after this?
Let's cut our hair. Let's put our clothes away. Let's get darker colors.
And then we're gonna release an album with like a track called Ill Demonic Click.
Yes.
Right?
I remember that. Good Lord.
Evil Ways. And this right. And these guys are talking about Evil Ways and like it was such a shift of sound, such a shift of image. You mentioned when we saw the Time to Sit is Straight video, and they're like running down the subway and they're like jumping and they're like they're trying to be like a Black Moon video. It was right. Like a Black Moon Who Got the Props kind of video.
Right. Look like Das Effects. Look like Black Moon.
They got rid of their humor. They got rid of their like kind of like
it's the same thing that Black Sheep did. They had to change with the times. They didn't know what to do, and they had to get harder, and they had to get more serious, because being serious is in.
But the irony is, even with Black Sheep, remember, the first right. track on Black Sheep's album is making fun of groups trying to be hard.
Right.
So
that's what happens. They're victim. Victim of the trends. Victim of the times. Record label probably whispering in their ear to cut the shit out. What do you do at this point for these artists? What do you do?
This was the second single. This was Hit the Track. The two singles, Time to Set It Straight and Hit the Track, are the best songs on the album, and that's not saying much.
I don't remember Hit the Track at all. This could hit the shit, hit the fan.
This could hit the bricks.
I don't remember this at all, but yes, I this album is awful. Totally awful. About as bad as Nonfiction awful. Done.
I think the album was entirely produced by Haas G and Kool Kim. I think the album was really poorly marketed by Wild Pitch, but I also think Wild Pitch marketing wasn't their
They're
biggest.
Never good at marketing.
I mean,
right.
All
those albums.
Right. So, and they had some classics on their hands. I mean, they had Word Life from OC. I mean, they had right. a lot of shit in 94.
They gave people a chance, but they didn't know how to promote them. And that was it.
And I think that the Wild Pitch would slowly, like, disband, fall apart after this.
Yeah.
You know, like, in the mid-90s. And then the group just disbanded. And Haas G went on to be an electrician.
As he should. Of course.
Hey, props to guys that had a fallback plan. You know what I mean?
That's a big one, yes.
Come on.
That's a big one.
I give him mad respect.
Yes.
For just, you know, like, hey, man, okay, this shit didn't work out. Why keep forcing ourselves on people? Let me just go work and support my family. And
there you go.
And they had one of the few things that people did. They had a freaking, you know, gold single, number one single, you know, with blue cheese. I mean, shit. Barely any guys would be able to have that, so.
Delusions of grandeur. So, at least, as long as you can pivot, so.
So, here's a little rap trivia here. So did you know Haas G would actually go by his birth name Carlos Evans and produce tracks in the 2000s? And most notably, it was a track that you probably played in the club from an artist, Lil' Kim.
Oh.
Do you remember what song he produced for Lil' Kim? That was a smash in 2003. Smash.
Ladies' Night.
Oh, close. Magic Stick.
Oh, okay.
With 50 Cent. So that's produced by Haas G.
Wow.
That's not wild?
That's coming out of the woodwork there.
And another one, he produced Apollo Kids for Ghostface Killah.
Okay, right.
So, and he went, you know, he's produced stuff for Inspect the Deck. He did like a whole album for Inspect the Deck.
Well, because they're all buddies.
Yeah, he did Raekwon. He did stuff for Raekwon. He did stuff for Busta Rhymes.
Who's dang helping him out here?
His new alias is... He's called Phantom of the Beat, which I'm not a fan of that
Wonderful.
Name. I like Carlos Evans. Go by
your
birth name, homie.
Yeah.
But shout out to him having a hit with Magic Stick. So Cool Kim actually would rename himself New York Oil and become a mixtape rapper and a battle rapper.
Well, hopefully that oil is crude. Hopefully.
Let's play Ill Demonic Click real quick. What a confusing...
This is very, very dated sound for 94.
This is
like 93.
Yeah, they're definitely behind the times on this one, you know? I think also the probably Wild Pitch, I don't know, they probably held on to this album for a little bit, you know? It seemed dated. Like, this album sounded like it should have came out in
93.
Like 93, early 93.
Right.
Yeah.
Typical sound. Sounds like a Yag Fu front. Sounds like a Funk Dubious. All of those comparisons come to mind.
So they have since reunited in 2014. They've put out some singles and stuff, but hey, you know, like...
Yeah, good for them.
What do you think the Source gave this album in 1994?
Three.
They gave it three mics.
Yes. They gave it three. Holding on to hope. The three mics, holding on to hope.
Now, did you buy this album?
Yes, I did.
Ooh. So I bought it too. I bought it when it came out. And I was excited, but I was confused by the album cover because they're like jump kicking on the album cover, right? They're jump kicking on the album cover.
They're stomping the way into our music.
They got
vibe.
The Timberlands. They got the big hoodie jackets, right? The military grade jackets. And then I listened to the album and I was so confused. Yeah.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro. That's all I remember.
Okay, I hate saying this, you know, we're not, and remember guys, we said nice things about UMC, so we're not here to just shit on people, but what do you give the album then and what do you give it now?
Then, two mics.
Okay.
Now, one.
Oh, man.
Quite frankly, no one's listening to this in 2021.
I'm giving it two back then, I'm giving it two now. Maybe I'll give it 2.5 back then because I did like Hit the Track and Time to Set It Straight.
Time to Set It Straight was the only salvageable song of this entire thing. That's it.
So, I'll give it two now.
Wow.
Because believe me, on this show, we're going to review way worse albums. Trust me, I know what's coming. I feel like I know what's coming.
Well, one can go down to negatives now. There's still negative ratings. So I can still give negative ratings.
All right. We're at 43 minutes. Do we have time for one more album? Or do you...
I think it's time for another teaser.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
For another teaser.
Fair enough. All right. Fair enough. All right.
People love the teasers.
Oh, do they?
No, I'm just making that up. So, with that said.
All right. Here's a teaser of what we're going to be talking about on our next episode.
All right, there you go.
We're not going to tell you who this is. Do you guys know who this is?
I think so.
I hope you guys know who this is.
If you're listening to this, you're going to know who this is. I hope. But then again, I don't know who listens to this, so therefore, who knows what's going to happen.
Well, Once again, sir, appreciate your insight. Appreciate you tolerating this old music.
We're hanging in there.
You hung in there, man. You hung in there. Yeah, so... Any Easter eggs? Any other any Easter eggs for the fans to for the end of the show here?
All right, if you're gonna to confirm that you listened to this episode, write us a review on iTunes with the comment "Uno, dos, tres, cuatro."
I like
That's
it.
All you gotta write, and we'll be gratefully thankful that you wrote a review and listen, and that would be the key phrase, Easter egg.
As always, this is a part of the Sleep Time's Over, family of podcasts. You also have your other show, F is for Fitness, which drops every Friday. Yes. You guys had a pretty provocative episode this last episode.
Oh, yeah,
talking about sex and
sex.
You gotta add it with that extra X.
You gotta say it. Sex. Yeah. It's sexy.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean,
doesn't get when Larry King said. Remember when Larry King said sex?
Larry
sex.
King. That's true, right? I forgot about that. Rest in peace.
You'd add like an extra two Z's. You'd triple X the
right.
Sex.
You knew how to get ratings. So, there was the sex show.
Yeah.
We got, and then it translates into that's every Friday, and then this show's going to come out Thursday, which is not sexy at all.
Right.
UMCs and sex have never been used. So that's never going to be.
Blue cheese. You know, blue cheese. Mentioned blue cheese during sex.
That's never going to
happen. You know what kind of be a sex song? One to grow on.
That's
Where is my snare drum?
Exactly. Organized Confusion, Black Sheep, Nolan, and sex. Even Black Sheep, what used to be talking about sex. Not anymore. Nope, very dry show. So that just about does it.
Well, thank you guys again for tuning in. Once again, who this group are playing right now? We're going to be talking about them on next week's episode. All right, I'm Scott Cameron. This is Aaron Sakai. Peace.